Chema, and first of all, it's a great joy and honor to be with all the soldiers and generals of the mother. So my heartiest, heartfelt, regards. It's a rare privilege, rarest of rare privilege. And I think even gods envy us because while it's all right to enjoy the fruits in heaven or Vaikuntha, it's a very difficult, rarest opportunity to get a chance to serve the mother. It is an event 30 years or so back, so I can share it, a kind of personal experience that I had with the mother. We can, no problem, either ways we can. I just asked her, the background and all is not important. I want to serve you as your instrument, and she said it's very difficult. So I asked her again, she said it is very difficult. When third time I asked her, she said all right. And then what I experienced, so I realized that it's not, we may think that somehow we are here, but I believe it applies to everyone. It's just that I noted something, and there are many who have probably not noted it like this. That's all. Because to be her instrument, to be in some way connected with her towards the new creation, toward the future, is the rarest of rare privilege. Because there is a difference between doing work as the Karma Yoga, which is gives us such a strong foundation, and doing works to participate in the new creation. The foundation of Karma Yoga is same, and we all are aware of it. I can only very quickly say to get rid, to start with, of Nishkam Karma, because all the time our attention is focused on the result. And when we are focused on the result, especially with the ego, there is a slow deviation which starts. I am the only one who is right. We forget that, you know, I have been given a small area of work. Whatever it is, let me focus on that, and we start feeling responsible for everyone and everything. It is one of the first lessons one learns in the ashram itself. When I came, being worked in a center, so the natural tendency was, oh, this photograph, let me just put it right. This one should be cleaned. There was a kind of, whatever way people were looking at it, there were people who were cleaning it, the workers. So we were used to doing it ourselves in the center. In whatever center I worked, it was that, no, workers will not do these things, we'll do. So cleaning the floor and all this, and it gave such a great joy and such a wonderful progress. So I thought I'll get a same opportunity. And so I thought it's an opportunity because it's not being done as I had thought about it, and I started saying, yeah, let me do it. So my feeling was that everybody would be happy. But it led to a very opposite reaction. The opposite reaction was, he has just come, he is trying to show off or something to gain advantage. So I could sense within 2 days that this is not how things have to be done here. And then when I looked back, I realized that what we are here for, outer service is one part, but its importance lies in the fact that it is meant to help us grow. And slowly I realized that there is a work given to me, and that's my field. What is given to others, what others are doing, is their field. They may progress, they may not progress, it's their business. And then there were so many stories of the mother that came to my light. One of them was where, I'm just sharing this as a, because they have instructed so much, that there was a man who used to sell ashram eggs. Ashram eggs means he was an ashram inmate. So eggs, whatever he would get as part of his quota, he would sell it. And then those eggs had the stamp of the ashram put on it. So you can imagine now what is the state. So this matter was reported to the mother, and the mother said, you know it, I know it, that's the end of it. She didn't stop. it was his way of progressing or going down. Another story, which this is about work, about personal nature. Very often we get into a habit of criticizing, tendency to, very beautifully I have seen how mother would focus on your strength in the work. That's the only business. Dyoman Bhai once took a list of 25 persons. He said, why are you keeping so many people here who are useless? So his own idea. Mother said, give me a list of people whom you think are useless. So he made a list of at least 25. He knew there are more, but let me put. And the mother kept saying, but this one does this well, this one does this well. Came to the 25th person, said, but have you noticed that he puts the stamp on the envelope very well? Dyoman Bhai said, thank you, mother, I have got my lesson. So a man complained to someone, at least he was a trustee, so he had the right to ask. But there was a person who was noticed in some activity in his room, which you don't expect normally, and the room was a little open. So a person passing by saw it. He wrote to the mother, mother, this is what I saw. How horrible, whatever it is. Mother's reply was, don't look that side henceforth. One interesting story Jugal Dar told me. Jugal Kishore Mukherjee must be knowing, he was registrar in the Center of Education. So he used to observe, I'm seeing how these things are so small and yet so important, because they give us lessons of life. So he used to notice our two great stalwarts, Nirodha and Amal Kiran, both were hard of hearing. So at the Samadhi, when they would speak sometimes, it used to be quite loud because they couldn't hear, not deliberately. So he used to feel, naturally people who are sitting sometimes would look this side, sometimes they would look awkward. So he told Andrida, mother's son, I can't help it, but I must tell mother about it. I am very uncomfortable. So what should I do? So he first asked, before I tell, I have a suggestion that should I tell them? Don't do this. So mother's reply was, if you tell them, they may progress. If you don't tell them, you will progress. And then she says, okay, you can tell them once. And if you look at it like this, what we forget, the essence of all these stories are, we think human life and the way we are today is the final finished product. But the fundamental truth that we are here to realize is, this is only a practice match. The real game has not yet begun. And the real story which divine has written, the whole problem of life is, our storybook has two pages. As I look at it, when you open a book, one side divine writes our story, the other side we write our story. Our story begins from the womb. Parents start writing. They have written few lines. Then society starts writing. Then we start writing. Then our husband starts writing. Much late in life, when we are maybe 60, 70, we wonder why life is the way it is, why things are not the way I want them to be. Then by chance, sometime we look on the left page where God has written our story and we see how we have deviated and deflected. So right now we have to just learn to receive what is the story that the divine has written for us. And if we can realize that itself, it's a wonderful, wonderful achievement. Just to know, as he says, the first thing in works is, what is the divine will? What is the story he wants to write? And we are constantly either erasing, deflecting. And actually, if we look at the problem of world, everybody complains and, you know, curses divine and complains. But actually, there is only one problem, that there is an original impulsion of the divine will and there is a deflection which takes place, all because of desire and ego. If we look at it, it's very simple. Correct this, we will know what, at least as one individual, we have our own contribution. As a little story goes, that there was somebody walking on the shore and that person saw the fishes left by the waves and the fishes were dying, he would pick each fish and throw into the sea. So there was a passerby passing. He said, "Do you think it will make a difference to the fishes?" He picked up one which was still struggling, threw into the water and says, "It has made a difference to this one. That's all I know." So a lot of time that goes and a lot of training, it's like a training ground, is simply to tune ourselves to the divine will. We presume that if this work is given to us by whatever circumstances, it is the divine will. It may not be so. In fact, Mother has, there is a conversation where she speaks about chance and the divine will. Here she uses the word chance in a very different way, specific way. She says chance is all these deflecting things which come and create the world as it is. And there is a deeper reason for it and a deeper reason than the deeper. We need not go into it. But coming back practically, this world is a distortion. It's not an illusion, but a distortion. A deviation from the original divine purpose. If it was not so, obviously life would have been beautiful. As simple as that. Of course, the apologists try to explain it by saying, no, God is giving punishment and this, that. But we know that God whom we love is lover par excellence. That's how he's a friend, he's a lover, he's a mother, father, everything. So where does this distortion and deflection come from? It's because individualities are created. And individualities are created, why? Because the divine one wants to become many. He enjoys it. But we have a false individuality and a true individuality. The false individuality is a construct of the ego. It is like the, when a building is being constructed, it's like the outer scaffolding. So when you go past some constructions and you say, whose place is it? Oh, is it? It is the owner's place, somebody. Where is the owner? Oh, he is living somewhere else. When the house is ready, he will come. So building is getting ready, we don't get an idea what is happening inside. Much later it will be ready and then the owner dwells. So at this point of time, the whole thing is to keep the temple clean so that the living presence can be installed there. The presence is there. But it's not living in the sense it is living, but it has become inactive like jada. That's the story of Shiva lying. Why? Because it's a two-way process. Someone asked the mother about the samadhi. She said, as long as there is one individual who has faith, the samadhi will continue to radiate what it is radiating. So there is a two-way process. All yoga is about that. So we take it for granted. Many people in their life take it for granted. So first thing is to develop a bond. And the whole idea is, shall we develop a bond through meditation or through works or through bhakti? And Sri Aurobindo would say all the three. Each forges a bond in a certain way. When we meditate, it's the mind which is involved. It is trying to form a bond. If mind were everything, there is no problem. Then it's enough. Like in certain yogas, mind meditates, merges in the divine and all the rest goes its own way. But we also have a heart. That heart has also come from the divine. So that heart also must engage through bhakti. And of course, Sri Aurobindo has given his own bhakti sutras, which I have read all the scriptures, so I can tell you, you won't find anywhere, at least I didn't find it anywhere, having read Narad's bhakti sutras, Sandil's bhakti sutras and others, what is there in prayers and meditations. It is the book for bhakti sutras, karma yoga, everything is there. Where she really explains in a very beautiful way what should be our inner attitude, how we should approach. So bhakti is another very important. But in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, work is the most important, which is so, all are important. It's not that. It's not like just keep doing work. But where she has, when people would write to Sri Aurobindo and say that, I am coming to the ashram so that the mother may give me a mantra. So Sri Aurobindo's reply, the mother does not give mantra. She gives work. But we must understand work takes place on these two levels, outer work and inner work. Merely doing outer work Okay, it's fine, but without the inner work, it loses its significance. It is something like when we hear the flute of Hari Prasad Chaurasia. We must have heard his name and the flute also. Wonderful, of course. But there is difference between the flute of Hari Prasad and the flute of Hari. The original Basari. That's why it is said in the Bhagavad that when everything is over and Radha comes and then she starts, she leaves Dwarka also and then she is living like a recluse and Sri Krishna knows when she is going to leave the body and goes there. And he asks her, tell me one wish I want to fulfill. She says, I want you to play the flute as you played in those days. Very touching story. So Sri Krishna plays the flute as never before and Radha melts and merges. What he does after playing the flute is very interesting. After that flute, he breaks his own flute and says, never again will Krishna play the flute. Now, it's not just an ordinary flute. See, this is the difference. Flutes make sound. If you are an expert, it'll make very good sound. We don't know what kind of flute, probably the same ragas or whatever it is. But then it's Krishna's breath which is going through its hollow and flute is such a wonderful simile or example or analogy that what is the beauty of the flute is that it's just hollow. Any other stringed instrument, percussion instrument, it provides a resistance and therefore you have... But flute is hollow. If we too can become just a God's hollow. That's the difficult part. You see how Sri Aurobindo in those 3 days completely empties his mind of everything. His whole consciousness becomes still. He has to speak after that because he is still in the freedom struggle. He has not yet gone to the jail. And people ask him, he asks his guru, how am I going to speak? I don't have anything now inside. And the guru says, he asked him, Lele, that do you feel his presence in the heart? He says, yes. Just imagine, presence is always there, but it's obscure. So he asked that, well, when you speak, just offer your pranam to him and his presence in the audience and speak. That's how Sri Aurobindo spoke and wrote the Arya and everything else subsequently. Why? Because he could become God's hollow. Not his ego resisting, what I should speak, what I shouldn't speak. Sometimes people ask, Uttar Pada speech. Sometimes they say, why is Sri Aurobindo speaking about Sanatan Dharma? Why is speaking about this and that? I said, thank God Sri Aurobindo didn't need to consult you. He's speaking as the breath of God. That's the end of the story. Who are we to tell him what he should speak and not speak? That is the state to be reached where our being is so completely surrendered. And there we see that works bring in this new dimension. Because in the Jnana Yoga, in the Bhakti Yoga, where works are not involved, we are not actively engaging with the world. Even if we are engaging, we can always, when we don't find something agreeable, just close your eyes and meditate. Turn to God in bhakti, in the traditional bhakti worship. But in Karma Yoga, you have to see God as wearing the mask of the world. That's why Mother would give work, not a mantra. So first thing is it engages us with the outward body of God. That's what Sri Aurobindo says in Savitri, this world is God fulfilled in outwardness. And second, it engages all our dynamic parts, our body. If physical transformation is the ultimate goal, then is it possible just by sitting in meditation or feeling love? All this is very important, indispensable. And he has spoken so much about love and bhakti as the crown. But works are indispensable in yoga. It's not just to satisfy some whims, and it's an indispensable, because the instruments are getting engaged, mouth is getting engaged, ears, eyes, all the senses, hands, legs, all aspects of nature. When we read in Sankhya Yoga, there's a long description of nature. All of them are getting engaged. And we have developed, unfortunately, the other approach. Away from nature, away from world. We nice bhajan of Kabir Das, but always it felt incomplete to me. Where he speaks of, you know, that nature is very, he doesn't use those that language, but he uses a mystic language, but that's the sense. So stay away, be careful, because he's seeker after impersonal. But here, engaging with life, with world, with activity is so important. Not because of anything else, not because of we are trying to spread something or propaganda, none of these things. That's not at all the purpose. The divine is capable of doing what he has to do. But it is for us, our growth, our progress to start with. At least that one fish which is out of water needs to go back into the ocean and realize water is everywhere. So work is where all the dynamic parts get engaged, the will gets engaged. It is where we get to become aware. One of the first prayers of the mother, second, third prayer, where it says, works is the anvil on which our hours of contemplation is tested, our nature's different parts are retested to see whether they are ready really to receive the divine or not. So Karma Yoga, when we look at from Sri Aurobindo's perspective, has these two steps. First is the, as he says, ordinary Karma Yoga of the Gita. That is to liberate us from the entanglement of desires. We do karma only for, you know, sometimes getting a post or a special place. You know, the story of Narad Muni and Hanuman. So one day, Narad Muni comes to Hanuman. He loves to tease. He says, you know, I have seen a diary, secret diary with Narayana. The diary says, among the greatest of bhaktas, my name is on top. Hanuman, yours is number 4 or something. Hanuman says, it doesn't matter. I am not counting that. It's all right. I am happy for you. He says, he is not liking it. No, when people say such things, they want you to react. So he is not reacting. So he goes to Lord Vishnu and says, see, what kind of a person? I am telling him, he should have said that I want to be the best bhakta. He is not asking me. He is taking it in a different way. So Narayan says, actually, you are too much in a hurry, Narad, because he has got that curse, which is a boon, that you cannot stay at one place for a long time. That's the story behind it. But that apart, he said, you are always in a hurry. I said, what do you mean? You took that book and went away? He said, yes. Did you see what is the title? He said, it's the title of bhaktas. So he said, it's the list of bhaktas according to what the world believes are the greatest bhaktas. I have another book also. He says, what is that other book? He said, it's the book where according to me who are the greatest bhaktas. Now he is in a fix. He says, okay, Lord, show me. He says, see, whose name is on first? It is Hanuman. Hanuman doesn't care for himself. He doesn't care to be called a bhakta. He doesn't care to live in Vaikuntha. He doesn't care for anything. He's all the time busy with the work of the Lord. So this is the Karma Yoga where we get tuned. All the parts have to get tuned to the divine. That takes a long time. So I understand the ordinary Karma Yoga and Sri Aurobindo's Karma Yoga. This is, Sri Aurobindo has used this definition, that the ordinary Karma Yoga and the Karma Yoga in the Yoga of Transformation. From an experience which in FMC we had gone for listening to a music concert in Pune. So concert was of Pandit Ravi Shankar and Ustad Allarakha. Well-known masters. So we went around, I think 8:30, some of us, 4 students, gate crashers, We don't have money to buy tickets. So from the Tirpal we have tried to find, went inside and we said, okay, now we are inside. So for 1 hour, 2 hours, it's only going on two, and we are feeling very bored. Should we go back? Should we stay? Now, every time we are thinking, maybe now they will start. Now they will start. 2 hours have passed. I don't know what was the reason, but it's going on. Then suddenly he will do tuck, tuck, tuck. Then duck, duck. Then tuck, tuck, tuck. And he's also doing some. Sometime we'll feel, oh, he's going to start. But again, he's going on. After 2 hours, we felt, now he has started. Let's stay. Must have been around 10 o'clock. We had thought we'll hear for 1 hour and come back. Till morning 4 o'clock we were hearing. Because then we realized that this preparation is so important. So the ordinary karma yoga of the Gita is to prepare a consciousness to be tuned to the divine. That itself is a yoga. Nishkam karma, remember and offer, sarva dharman parityajya, mame kam sharnam bhaja, man manabhav madbhakta madhyajima namaskuru. So it's a big preparation where we have to learn to tune. Mind is tuned to ego, heart is tuned to ego, will is sitting in the background. Body doesn't know what is divine, poor fellow is acting according to whatever the vital pushes. That tuning takes such a long time. And such a wonderful close the Gita leads us to, sarva dharman parityajya. Before that, swadharma, swabhav, all this is important in its own place. But what is the culmination? Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja. Abandon all dharmas. This is where Shurvinda's yoga actually begins. So there was a story of our Rishabh Chanji. Some of us must have heard, read his biography. One of the best biographies of Shurvindo. Shurvindo, his life unique. The mother had asked him to write. And he spent 3 years. And very interesting story. He wrote the biography. He went, did a lot of research. One of the most well-researched book written with intellectual clarity and heart of bhakti. Of course, she told him, write only till his movement before Pondicherry. After Pondicherry period, nobody can write about his life. Mother's words. He just summarized it later on, that part, just very summarily. But it's basically that. And when he finished the book, he gave it to the mother. Mother sent it to the press. The book was never published. Because there was some very wise man sitting in the press. He said, mother has sent the book but not given the order to print it. There are wise people everywhere. Rishabh Chanji never asked anyone even once, what happened to my book? Why hasn't it been published? Someone asked Rishabh Chanji, what happened? You had gone. He said, I have done my work, offered it to mother. But it has not been published. He said, that's not my lookout. Much later, he left the body before mother's physical departure, withdrawal. When he left, then all this, then what do we do with the book? He said, what? You have not published the book? So the book got published. Perfect example of Nishkam Karma. Years he has spent doing research, and this is not ordinary book. If you ask me, I've read almost every work of Sri Aurobindo and the mother and all the books, biographies. My favorite is this book, Benchmark. All other biographies of Sri Aurobindo come later. There may be little more details here and there. But this is something very unique. It's mother, as if mother is writing. Just like Adventure of Consciousness is for the Western world, this is for the Indian world. He never asked. And in his life, this swabhava and swadharma, which I was mentioning about, so he was quite intellectual, coming from a fairly rich family. I think many of us know about him. So he was given the work of in furniture department. In furniture department, so you have to pick up the cots and take out the bugs inside. So the method was very You have to put hot water and bugs will come out. You have to kill them with a stone. Not a very nice thing to for a Jain. So he's a Jain. He doesn't even eat potato and onion. So before he was given the work and he joined, he has written a very beautiful, before he is given the work but not the first assignment, he writes a letter of gratitude to Sri Aurobindo and the mother that I am so this thing, everything. And then mother's assignment comes that you have to clear the bugs from the court. He keeps now this letter on the side. Writes another letter to Sri Aurobindo. Now only to Sri Aurobindo. I think mother does not know that I am a Jain. And a Jain is not supposed to kill even a microbe, forget about bugs. He thought Sri Aurobindo will inform the mother, actually, you know, you may be not knowing about these issues of Indian culture, complications. Mother wrote to, Sri Aurobindo writes back to Rishabh Chand, whatever work the mother has given you is for your progress. Take it in that spirit and do what has been told to you. This is an example of Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. So many examples we have. So then we are liberated and then comes the real play. This is still a practice match. The yoga of the Gita is the best way to prepare for Sri Aurobindo's yoga. That's why he said that where other yogas end, because there is no idea of transformation. So when we realize the inner freedom, especially through works, because works will come in Sri Aurobindo's yoga of transformation, cannot be without works. So freedom can be realized through bhakti yoga, jnana yoga and so many other methods. But when we go through the yoga of the Gita, see how Sri Krishna and Sri Aurobindo blend with each other every time. The yoga of the Gita is the best preparation for Sri Aurobindo's yoga. And then when we have reached that point where we are completely surrendered in the hands of the Divine Mother, whatever you want me to do, that let me do. Whatever you want me to be, that let me be. Whatever you want me to speak, let me speak that. And if you want me to be silent, let me be silent. When that surrender is perfected, and that's when Sri Aurobindo's work starts. And that's where each of us, because this ordinary Karma Yoga is done anywhere, any activity. We may not be in the center at all. We may be in Timbuktu if at all such a place exists. Yes, it does exist. Some people have kept names like Timbuktu in a forest and other places. So we may be anywhere on any part of the world, Gita's Karma Yoga can be practiced. But is the work that we are doing is the work that the Divine intends us to do? This is a question which all of us have. For example, if I am a housewife looking after my husband, children, is that what Divine wants me to? This is a big question, to which there is no simple, straight answer. Or a man who is, on the borders, fighting. It's a noble work still. Is that the work the Divine wants me? Or if we take that this world is a distorted appearance, then we don't know what has really led me to there. It may be, may not be. So what is it that the Divine's intention is in me? What is the Divine will in me? And then start the yoga of transformation. There is a certain work which comes our way. And that's where working in places like Sri Aurobindo's center or the ashram develop a greater significance. Ordinary Karma Yoga can be practiced anywhere. But here there is a special force, a special field, a special opportunity, a special privilege, where we can now tune the instrument after that 2 hours of two, and how many lives we don't know. Where we can now tune our instrument only to the Divine will. And that is where we start correcting the disorder of the world. First within us, this world has deviated from Divine will. If not, then it would not be in such a mess. People have tried to explain it on the basis of law of karma and all that. I am not entering into it. These are ways to explain away. the rapes and murders and bomb blasts and God knows what. I must say, foolish way to imagine a God who is punishing people so that they get tuned is the most horrible concept we have built around the divine. But as Aurobindo says, we know of Krishna who only loves. Our God is not a God who is punishing, busy and tuning, forcing with the rod. He gives us time, opportunity, experiences through which we grow till a time comes. That's why sometimes when in life we have helpless situations, they are most conducive to come near to the divine. You are almost convinced or compelled. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. We have a little story of Narad Muni. Nice person. Lovely. So he once meets Krishna, tells him that you have been such lovely talks and all this you have given on Kurukshetra and you have taught so much. Why don't you teach me a little bit? He said, okay, I'll teach you. But right now I'm thirsty. To speak, I need water. Get some water. He goes very happy. Krishna wants water. Starts picking up water. Draws the water. As he's about to go, suddenly he meets a very young, lovely woman who says, I'll give you water, Muni. He says, oh, that's very nice. So first he satisfies his thirst. Then she says, you just come to my home. Have little food. It works both ways. So he goes food. Father is waiting. Oh, he is a lovely person. He knows all the Vedas. Everything is the best suitable person for my angel. And so they get married. He has children, everything. And then one day there is fire. And in the fire suddenly his kutia goes. His house goes. His children go. Everybody dies. And he is remembering God and cursing. Why have you done this to me? Why have you done this to me? Left me alone in the middle of the world. And then he hears a voice in the heart. Narad, I am waiting. What happened to you? The tani you went to bring for me? Ah, my God. Suddenly he wakes up. He said, do you understand now what is the power of my Maya? This is not Maya for illusion creator. It is to prepare him. See, there are things inside your nature. He gave him a live demonstration. So too when we join a center or work in the center, it is not to show our capacities. Not to prove a point to anyone. Not to get praise. Not to be shrink from blame. None of these things. It is simply something given to us is an offering directly at the feet of Mother and Sri Aurobindo. And my personal experience, before joining the ashram in 2003, Mother's grace that got opportunity to work in two centers in Bangalore, Sri Aurobindo Bhavan, Alsur Lake, and Patiala, Sri Aurobindo Bhavan. Other centers also, but these two actively involved, day and to night. I mean, morning 7 before going for my office, Air Force, this thing, go there at least quickly, come back. And then afternoon 1:30, go there many times, we would have a lunch there only. Me and my wife, both of Kavita, she's in Shabda, both of us will go there and do work till 9 o'clock. No cooking, nothing. So what's about food? So sometimes some food is being sold outside, no? So we'll pick up. And it used to be curfew in Patiala, 86. So you were not supposed to go in. So I would carry my Air Force uniform, wear it. And when the policeman will stop, I'll stop and say, see, I'm Air Force officer. After a few days, he understood. He said, sir, only this much area, a few feet, you drag it. After that, you drive it. 9 o'clock, 9:30, because you are in that bliss. I can only say that the delight that you get from that and the progress, the fastest progress. Here in the ashram, the progress in a different way. There is great intensity. Here more than what you do, that intensity will start changing you. But in centers, my personal experience is you progress much faster if you take that approach and attitude. If not, then it's a different story that freedom is given to everyone, including in the ashram. I'm sure Bindra and the mother both have said it's not enough if you just live in the ashram. Someone told him, sir, those who are near to you will progress very fast. I believe they will get the super mind fastest. So Shrivindo, with his humor, he said, in that case, this ink blotter on my table should become supramental first. That has to be done. No center or ashram ensures us. But yes, centers and ashram make it so much easier because they are special fields. Like olden time, we had these Shakti spots. I don't know if I have been to some of these places. And one of the places in Gaya where Shakti is, that is Divine Mother's body, Sati's body is there. And I just remember just touching. Actually, I don't feel interested in going after Mother and Shrivindo, but people take. So if they take, what do you do? Okay, fine, some aspect of the Divine Mother. So when I touched, I actually felt a throb coming repeatedly. I tried 3-4 times. Then I asked, because I am not interested, I have not bothered to ask, what is it that is there? Which part of the Divine Mother as Sati? And they said, it's her heart that is there. It was such a concrete experience. Amoji was there, he knows about it. So there were Shakti spots where you went, rejuvenated, or as described in Savitri, people went to these ashramas and felt they drank deep from the ocean of God's liberty and peace and came back. One of the functions of the ashram and centers used to be that there are places in this world of madness, and Mother has spoken about it, that there should be places where you can go and breathe this air. Because there is a yoga which had its purpose, its height was liberation. But now a new yoga has started and there are centers which let you breathe that atmosphere. It's difficult to come to Pondicherry all the time. Though right in the beginning, Sri Aurobindo had disciples here and disciples outside. This illusion we must totally get rid of, that only people in ashram are disciples. Mother has cleared it. Even everybody in the ashram is not our disciple. I mean, that she has said. She used the word very cryptically. Yes, many are here because of chance. Then she says, no, I'll not tell more. So don't try to judge people in the ashram that, oh, he's a disciple. In fact, at one place she even says there are very few who are really disciples called for the yoga. So people ask then, what have they come from? Oh, representatives. See, just, you know, Shrivindo brought all kinds in Noah's Ark, no? So that's a representative boat where all types of humanity is here. So that every level of humanity has to adjust to the supramental manifestation. That's why in centers you will have. In ashram also. Because it's not individual realization. It's a collective. You can't cut sections of humanity. In the ashram there is a letter of Sri Aurobindo. If we called only sattvic people. In fact, one place he says, disciple says, ah, what kind of disciples we are. It would have been very nice if you called men like Vivekananda. So Sri Aurobindo, with his humor, he says, as to disciples, I agree. What kind of... But then he says, but as to Vivekananda, it is very doubtful if he, men like him, would agree. And even more doubtful, if he agreed, the ordinary humanity will not show up. Because it's a tremendous pressure for change. Certain things one doesn't care in ordinary yogas. So there is a pressure for change, things come out. And then he says that, and besides, if I called only sattvic people, then the problem of rajasic and tamasic humanity will remain unaddressed. So I have called all kinds. It takes time to understand. Sometimes when you see, I don't know, dining room now, but at least I'm just sharing. So I would see one person, ashram inmate, he would pick up the plate, so much rice, and I used to feel, my God, he's eating so much. So much rice, how is he able to eat? This thought used to come. Of course, then you understand everything. But all types, all kinds of humanity, like Noah's Ark, it's a transition to a new world. Or rather, King Satyavrata's boat, we know that story. There are the Saptarishis who are helping the process. But what is the command given to King Satyavrata, who becomes King Saddhadev Manu, of this transition? He is told by Lord Vishnu that, well, you have to collect a specimen from every sample, which includes snakes, which includes lions, which includes different human beings. So the ashram is King Satyavrata. Now Saddhadev Manu has, time is over. Now we are going to enter, already entered into the new era. So all kinds of samples, because in a new creation, it's not uniformity, but again diversity. So in the diversity, all kinds of human beings are destined to come. It's a big challenge sometimes in the center to navigate. Some people feel, oh, why this person, and that person is feeling, why that person? But if we understand very simply one thing, that's elaborated as a very small little story, maybe with that, if there are questions, because I can just continue like this. I'll read a passage from Sri Aurobindo after this. So the story goes that in an ashrama, there was problems going on. Everybody was fighting, this, that. And when you do fight and quarrel, people start going away. So slowly, all the people who used to come, and when people come, they give you money also for sustenance. They started becoming less and less and less. Ultimately, these four original trustees are left. So they don't know what to do now. What has gone wrong? So they go to a yogi. And yogi says, oh, that's very simple. I'll tell you the solution, but in each one's ear. Don't share it with each other. Okay? So each one, he says something, they come back. And the place begins to prosper slowly. Everything comes. Money comes, people come, whatever they wanted. So one day they say, I know what he told me. I don't know what he told you. Now we can share. What is there? Now Yogiji is also not here. Yogi Maharaj. So they sit together to say, what did he say? He told all of them the same thing. One of you is Narayana. Now they don't know who is Narayana. They better behave nicely with all of them. You can't fight Narayana. Madhu Ketab tried. And you know, Narayana is capable of everything. So you are also Narayana, you are also Narayana. And slowly it got into their system. And that's where Sri Aurobindo's yoga takes off. If you read Tales of Prison Life, Yoga and Its Objects, the first book, what is the first meditation that he gives? He says, learn to see God in everything. It's not just a passive equality. Learn to see God in everything, everywhere. Learn to see He as the sole doer, not only in situations, circumstances, even in your family, your members, everywhere. And I think if this alone we can practice in life, we will change individually. And I have seen this, if you live with this idea, it has such a power that God is in everyone, it can change the most impossible seeming person. One small little incident, there used to be a person who would drink, and one day I scolded him. I had just come new. So a lot of Air Force tendency, and he came little drunk in the dispensary, and I told him, get out from here. And he said, who are you to tell me to get out? Then I thought he's right. But anyways, I said, I'm looking after the dispensary at this point of time. You can't come here in a drunk way. He said, but who are you? I said, see, I don't discuss all that. But here at this point of time. So he understood that logically he was trying to argue, so he went away. But he took a grouse. So for quite a few years, he would, wherever he would see me, a stout man, Haryana Jat, and you know, he'll try to stop me, trying to threaten. I'm on a cycle and he would just stop holding the thing. Now even threaten me, you know, I can murder you, you know what. So I would also with that, you know, I'm an Air Force fellow, don't try all this. It continued, but it's a nuisance. I started taking class, he started coming there. So mother has her ways. It rose to a point. And maybe after 3 or 4 years, I don't remember, one day in the ashram, I was sitting and I saw him. People were not allowing him to enter the ashram. Because he would drink, so he was told, you don't enter the ashram. But he would manage his way, like this only, bulldozing his way. So I saw him in the ashram. Suddenly I had a change of thought, change of heart. I said, if he can come, he has some love for the mother. And if he has some love for the mother, who am I to, you know, judge him? Now you see, it was a lesson for me. Next day I am sitting in the dispensary and this fellow comes. And usually he would come with all this to fight. And I had learned to avoid, not to react. I took it as exercise in samatha, to see God in him. All this I, thank God, practiced. That day he suddenly comes and I told him, hello, just 1 second. So he said, yes. He said, I want to tell you something. I said, okay, you tell me something, but I also have to tell you something. He said, okay, you tell me first. So I said, see, yesterday I saw you near the mother in the samadhi. So I thought, after all, he is also child of the mother. He has love for the mother. I use the word, he has love for the mother. So now, you know, everything that I used to feel towards you has gone. So he made a statement. He said, who else is there one should love? I was blown away, honestly. Here was a drunkard with all the unspeakable activities which we all knew. Suddenly makes a statement, who else is there one should love? Honestly, I had literally, you know, I went... I don't know, reactionless. Who can say such a statement? And then he said, I also came to tell you, I have dropped everything from my heart. Now you see, there was a change which took place because of an occult action of the mother. And it was not a momentary thing. It went on for years and everybody knew. So when he had a head injury, his wife came and said, you are the only doctor we want to call, but I don't know whether you'll come or not, because they knew all. I said, no, that's my work, I'll come. Anyways, you don't know what has gone in the background. So he had died. So I was called there, and it is that change. Just, I believe, and I have reasons to believe, that just because I started looking at him, that he also had love for the mother, he changed. And I have quite a few examples like that. So this is such a wonderful practice in the center. We have all kinds of people. But what is it that we are connected with? We are not connected with anything else except mainly that we have love for the mother. Even if we don't have love, at least we are working for her. Knowingly, unknowingly. The fact that we are all centered around this common activity of love for the mother and work for the mother, we should keep to that. The moment anything else comes, problem starts. Ego starts, desire starts, anger starts. So this is the mantra which I can share based on what I have observed or discovered and whatever Mother and Shubindu have spoken about. I'll just read a passage and then we can stop. From Shubindu's letters. The purpose of the old is to get away from life to the divine. So, obviously, let us drop karma. This is the old yoga. The purpose of the new is to reach the divine and bring the fullness of what is gained into life in every sphere. For that, yoga by works is indispensable. Shubindu's words. The including of the outer consciousness in the transformation is of supreme importance in this yoga. Meditation cannot do it. Meditation can deal only with the inner being. So, work is of primary importance, only it must be done with the right attitude and in the right consciousness. Then it is as fruitful as any meditation can be. I have seen letters of some mother, not published here, but people whom she has said, written actually, you don't need to meditate, work is enough for you. And then she says, if you do work in the right attitude, it'll make you progress 10 times more. Actually, I've seen the letter. There used to be a hockey coach here. They had come from Kashmir after all the... And he showed me that this is what mother gave me. What was his work? He used to teach hockey in the school. He said, you don't need anything. Do it with the right attitude and you can progress 10 times more. And he describes the Karma Yoga as the calm consciousness supporting and the strength from above doing the work. With that, the bhakti which feels it to be the mother's consciousness present and working. Okay, the work here is not intended for showing one's capacity or having a position. I think this is where we have to be very careful. Or as a means of physical nearness to the mother, that if I am working in mother's room, I am closer. If I am working at the samadhi, we are special favorites. There is nothing else. I mean, we give the example of, did Bharat love Rama less than Lakshman? We know when Ram returns, what is his state when he meets Bharat? He has done far away from him. And at a most crucial moment, he is instrumental. That is the grace of the Lord when Hanuman, he sends him. But as a field and an opportunity for the Karma Yoga part of the integral yoga, for learning to work in the true yogic way, dedication through service, practical selflessness, obedience, scrupulousness, discipline, setting the divine and the divine's work first and oneself last, harmony, patience, forbearance, etc. When the workers learn these things and cease to be egocentric, as most of you now are, then will come the time for work in which capacity can really be shown. That is the divine work which we are meant to do. Although even then the showing of capacity will be an incident and can never be the main consideration or the object of divine work. And last, because is there a difference between center work and the work otherwise we do? Work here. Now here is not just ashram. There is a whole background. As I said, there were people working outside the places which Sri Aurobindo himself said, it is our foothold in the outside world. That's a long chapter. But work here and work done in the world are of course not the same thing. The work there, now there is the ordinarily in life when we are engaged with. The work there is not in any way divine work in special. It is ordinary work in the world. But still, one must take it as a training and do it in the spirit of Karma Yoga. This is what we have been talking about, the Yoga of the Gita. What matters there is not the nature of the work in itself, but the spirit in which it is done. It must be in the spirit of the Gita, without desire, with detachment, without repulsion, but doing it as perfectly as possible. Not for the sake of the family or promotion or to please the superiors, but simply because it is the thing that has been given in the hand to do. It is a field of inner training, nothing more. One has to learn in it three things. Work outside. Equality, desirelessness, dedication. It is not the work as a thing for its own sake, but one's own doing of it. And one's way of doing it that one has to dedicate to the divine. Done in that spirit, it does not matter what the work is. If one trains oneself spiritually like that, then one will be ready to do in the true way whatever special work directly for the divine one may any day be given to do. Okay, Jai Ma. I've just blabbered, shared whatever came naturally. I'm sure everybody knows all these things by experience, but still, the joy of sharing.